Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubs at the Club, brought to you by Snake River Stampede Whiskey, as always, but we'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the show. We're the Idaho Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network, coming to you live on N7 Day to talk all things Mass Effect video games. Just kidding. That's what I want to do, but that's not what we're going to do. I'm your host, Dallas Hammer. We're breaking down the Weber State versus Idaho matchup this weekend. Producer Martin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to hear you guys preview this game. I know I'm going to be there. I know something I forgot last week's show on Wednesday. It is actually Nickelback November month, not that other month that a lot of other people seem to want to celebrate. That is a little weird, but hey, I'm sorry we had to say we're starting it a week later, but hey, I'm excited for this week.
There he goes. Nickelback November, everybody. Brian, I know you're thrilled for Nickelback November. Tell me all about it.
Well, that's the point of November, to my knowledge. I mean, I know football and stuff is happening, but well, I mean, maybe I should throw the wheel back to you, Dallas. You're the one who's missed some episodes on the road to see Nickelback, allegedly. But I think our 19 and maybe counting live viewers, I think they want us to put the Weber State game on the shelf a little more to talk about these Nickelback concerts. We're not going to. But dude, we got 2 weeks left of football. Idaho. Every week is big from now on. Well, they all were anyway, but Idaho has a lot to gain with a win and a lot to not gain with a not win. So I'm ready to talk football.
Dallas, you're muted.
State. Oh, sorry. What?
You were muted just a second ago.
Yeah. Yes. That was, I was talking to myself. I'm a dumb bitch. I had a whole bunch of dumb bitch juice today and I left my water cup downstairs. So, this is going to be a really interesting show to get through. Anyways, guys, we're talking Weber State, but don't let the 4-5 record fool you. Weber State is a completely different team this weekend than they were at the start of the season. This year so far, again, 4-5 record, 2-4 in conference. They have wins over UNI, 34-17. And then Northern Colorado and ISU, they've lost to Montana State. They've lost to NAU. They've lost to UC Davis. They've lost to Eastern. However, recently they have changed their quarterback. As said in the comment section by one Captain58, how come teams have to get their quarterback situation settled right before they play Idaho? Shake my damn head. They did just move from Kylan Weissner, a longtime guy in the program there. He had completed under 60% of his passes, 782 yards, 2 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. A true freshman, Richie Munoz, has taken over. He is the heir apparent to the Weber State offense. He's Mickey Mantle's chosen one. Brian, what do we think about Richie Munoz before we get into the full team thing here? What do you think about the change from Weissner to Munoz?
Well, I think Patty Firks in the comment sections, he's dead on, says Richie looks like a big improvement. I mean, look, he is. On the Big Sky Conference season overall, right now, Weber, off of breaking 30 points for the first time since that Northern Iowa game you referenced in week 2 of the season, Weber's averaging 18 a game on the season. That's up from 15 heading into last week. Well, in Munoz's 2 starts, the Wildcats are averaging 28 points per game, which, hey, that's not lighting the world on fire, but that's like dead center of the conference. And offensively, I mean, it's very close to twice the production they've been averaging while starting Weissner. So, hey, phase one, objectively, Weber State is much more of a threat now. When you see Munoz on the field, head coach Mickey Mantle, a lot of his offense is based around having the quarterback execute simple reads, where it gets the ball out of his hands real fast. And what feels like close to like 70-ish% of the passes are vertically only traveling about 3 or 4 yards. They love to get the ball to the receivers one-on-one in the flats and hope the receivers can turn short passes into longer gains and then have those short passes set up eventual longer passes, which we did see that last week against Idaho State. Munoz in the second quarter had 3 touchdown passes, all of around 19 to 26 yards. And those were not short passes that broke long. That was just the receiver caught a touchdown. The play was over. That was it. So the Wildcats for sure have had more success. Munoz on the ground, I wouldn't call him a running quarterback, but he has the ability to opportunistically extend plays. He has the ability to opportunistically pick up a first down, but that, you know, he's not Sean Chambers. You know, there's Mantle's not calling a lot of designed runs for for Richie Munoz. But I mean, big picture, if you're going to start a true freshman later in the season, I think Mental is doing a lot of things right with what he's having Munoz do. And look at the evidence last week. Again, it was against Idaho State, not the best defensive team in the nation, but Weber broke 400 yards for the first time in what felt like forever. Munoz went 26 of 41 for 222 yards, 3 touchdowns and 1 pick. Also, his pick was not his pick. He got hit while throwing, and it was Idaho State executed the play, but I would not read that pick as like a freshman mistake. It was, you know, it just happened. But, you know, Weber State has some injuries on the ground that impact what they can do rushing. So they're going to have to rely on Munoz a little bit more. I mean, he just heard 41 throws against Idaho State. If you look, this was 2 weeks before, because Idaho State was off of a bye against Eastern when Weber scored 23. Richie Munoz went 18 to 31. So, hey, and he's averaging about 35, 38-ish passes over the last 2 weeks. I think that's pretty steady with what Mental wants to do. And it's not lighting the world on fire, but it is a drastic improvement over what Weber had been doing the previous 8 weeks.
Yeah, Brian, if you look at their stats, this is an offense that was about Northern Colorado bad. 20.7 points a game. This, again, these are all numbers after Munoz has, again, elevated the offense at least one full notch. 20.7 points a game, good for 10th in the conference. They were next to last in yardage, under 300 yards of offense per game, which is worse than Northern Colorado at this point, which is shocking. Last in third down conversions, last in first downs, last in total efficiency. They were 8th in rushing yards, last in passing yards. Just not a good offense, 11th in red zone offense. And now all of a sudden, the quarterback looks like it might be kind of figured out a little bit. Again, you're going to see growing pains. I think we've all seen that. Was Idaho has trotted out freshmen from time to time. And, I mean, you remember what Javonte McCoy looked like. It was a true freshman getting thrown out there to the Wolves against Eastern. Wasn't a particularly good game, but what was he going to do? What was anybody going to do? I don't know if anybody expected Javonte McCoy to be the best quarterback in the FCS 2 years later. Not saying Munoz is going to have a rise like that, but you're going to watch this kid get better, which is going to make their team get better, which is scary because when you look at the rest of their offense, now that they've figured out the quarterback, yeah, obviously this year is a lost cause. You know, somehow they beat Idaho, they win out, they get 6 wins, they probably aren't going to make the playoffs. So you're really trying to build for next season. But when you look at their offensive line, they have an All-American at left tackle, Noah Atagi. Is probably going to be an NFL player. His brother, left guard Ethan, was all Big Sky in 2022. Right guard Jordan Lutu, all Big Sky in 2022. As Brian said, there was that one interception from Munoz against Idaho State. The right tackle is a freshman. He's the guy that got blown up on that play. So there's your one weak spot. But across their line, they are loaded with seniors, loaded with guys that are either all conference or all American level. Even at the running back position, unfortunately for them, Damon Bankston is out for the season. He's absolutely their best running back. He's actually been out since the end of September, and he still leads the team in rushing yards. But, Brian, they have a committee of guys that they can run the ball. Their offensive line is stacked. Pass catcher maybe not quite as deep or talented, but you look at the pieces on this offense, and now if they have a quarterback they can trust moving forward. Again, we're talking Munoz threw more touchdowns in one quarter than Weissner had thrown all season. Yes, it was against Idaho State, but we're talking about that's a really big change. We've seen that from Idaho's quarterback play over the last year or two. What has happened when you go from not doing so great to, hey, we have a guy we believe in? Weber State could scare Idaho this weekend, Brian.
No, I mean, Weber State could for sure. I mean, you know, you talked about the running back room. Chris Jackson, he's the most dynamic running back left on Weber State. Damon Bankston is still the team's leading rusher, having only played in 4 games on the year. So that was a big hit for Weber. But, you know, Chris Jackson, he's shifty. I mean, honestly, he's not Anthony Woods or anything, but he has the ability to make guys miss. Chris Jackson's a guy who on a good amount of good amount of Big Sky teams, he can most certainly see some runs. And I guess, look, we'll end up pivoting to special teams and defense in a second, but to thoroughly beat the dead horse here, as is a theme of Tubbs at the Club coverage. In four big sky games with Kylan Weiser starting, Weber State was averaging 11.75 points per game. In the last two, like I said, they're averaging 28 with Richie Munoz. If you count Munoz's first start against UC Davis, by the way, the three games Munoz has started have been not all of the toughest games Weber's played, but they've been a few of the tougher ones. Going back those three, it's 23.3 points per game, which again, doesn't matter how you slice it. Weber State's offense now is somewhere between 2 and 2.5 times more efficient than it had been, which is a pretty good deal because, you know, defensively, Jay Hill's gone. I mean, that everyone knows that's the story part why Weber State made the playoffs in 2022. And this year feels like a step backwards because it is. Jay Hill was historically good Big Sky defensive coach. Some talent went with Jay Hill when he went to BYU. But Weber is, look, they're certainly not like a terrible defensive team. If you watch the Idaho State tape, Weber was pretty aggressive blitzing. Now, against Idaho State, they blitzed a bit more than they typically do. I mean, might be around twice as much just because Weber was not concerned about the threat of any sort of run from Idaho State. But if you watch the tape, Weber State certainly can get to the quarterback, and they still have some confidence that their safeties can maybe bend a little bit between the 20s by giving up short gaps for short passes that they're confident their DBs are going to be able to tackle and let those not extend further. A little bit of a bend don't break philosophy, which worked very well for Jay Hill for quite a while. But I mean, this year defensively, they're not the same monster they had been, but still, hey, they're the number five scoring defense in the Big Sky. So that's top half of the conference. They're the number five total defense as far as total yards. So that's, again, it's top half the conference. It's certainly better than what Idaho just struggled with against Northern Colorado. So, you know, you brought this up early, Dallas. Weber State, look, they're a team that Idaho's going to have to be there. Idaho's going to have to be present for this game.
Yeah, Brian, you mentioned Jay Hill moving on and Mickey Mental being promoted from OC to head coach this season. Part of the whole reasoning behind that is they were able to keep their co-defensive coordinators Grant Duff and Joe Dale around third year here for them. So Weber State really trying to hang on to what was being done with that program. Again, Jay Hill is one of the greatest coaches in Big Sky history. 68-39 in his career at Weber. Really, honestly, phenomenal output there. So they're going to keep doing the same things that they've done, which is play pretty solid football, not commit a ton of mistakes. Defensively, the thing that scares me is that there's three All-Americans on that side of the ball. Now, with a caveat, one of them is an All-American kick returner, but All-American kick returner doesn't necessarily mean he's not a very good corner. So you've got Winston Reed, All-American linebacker last year. He's the defensive MVP in the Big Sky this season. For the preseason ratings. And honestly, he's probably going to end up being the defensive MVP this season. Leads the conference in tackles with 91. He's got 9.5 tackles for loss. He's got a sack and a half. He's got an interception. He's got pass breakups. Like, the guy does it all. He puts up the stats, you know, the kind of thing that we'd see with Favai and all of the Ellis family linebackers. Kind of the same thing, just sitting there in the middle, just eating up that side of the field. They've also got Maxwell Anderson, who's probably the best corner in the Big Sky. He's only got 29 tackles this year, but he's got 9 pass breakups and 2 interceptions. Again, you just don't throw to that side of the field. Then on the other side of the field is Abraham Williams, an All-American kick returner, the best kick returner in the conference. He does have a touchdown. He leads the league in 30 yards, or leads the yard in... Oh, boy. Words are hard, guys. He leads the conference in return yards, averaging over 30 yards a return. There's a bunch of talent out there. They've got Braden Wilson. He's an edge rusher that's tied for 7th in the conference in sacks. Brian, this is a defense that will get after Idaho. They are second in the conference with 25 sacks. So again, you've got a couple really good corners there. You've got pretty solid edge rushing, and then again, their linebacking core led by Winston Reed is honestly pretty phenomenal. I know they haven't been, again, the world-beating Weber defense, but there is a point to be noted that some of those metrics will start to look better if their offense is able to stay on the field a little bit longer now that Munoz is taking snaps.
Well, hey, Tom Kendall asked in the comment section, how's Weber's time of possession? And like you hit it. That's if the offense can stay on the field. That's been what part of what Weber State's issue is. They're underwater time of possession wise. They average 26 minutes of possession on the season.
11th in the conference.
Which last I checked, you would not call that good. But hey, against Idaho State, again, hey, maybe, you know, when we talked about the Montana, when we previewed Montana, we talked about, hey, maybe you need to throw the first 4 weeks out before, you know, talk about the Idaho game. I think there's a lot of stats for Weber State that you do want to throw out the window for this game because they've figured out their offense to the point that it's fine. So, like, you know, against Idaho State, Weber held on the ball for 35 minutes, 40 seconds, which a 10-minute, 9-minute-ish increase on their average. Yeah, a pretty big deal, pretty noticeable. Look, you referenced Abraham Williams, who is, yeah, he's best kick returner in the conference. It's wild how Weber just keeps having great kick returners. Rashid Shaheed, he plays for the New Orleans Saints. He had been the best kick punt returner in the conference. Well, hey, another guy walks right behind him doing the same thing. One of the little, I guess you might call a legacy of Jay Hill, because he still have, you know, it's a ton of Jay Hill guys still on the team, is Weber is still pretty aggressive in special teams. You know, against Idaho State, Weber picked up an extra possession with an out of nowhere onside kick where they didn't change any formation whatsoever. It was in the second quarter. They just did an onside and executed real damn well. Almost pulled off a fake punt as well. Actually, the pass from the fake punt was there. The punter just missed the pass. But that's another area that Weber State traditionally, when they were in those lower scoring games, they would rely on special teams to build them up. Well, look, that is still part of that Wildcat DNA. And that's part of the formula for Weber State if Weber State's going to keep this competitive. Because, okay, spoiler alert, Weber State is not going to be favored in this game. One team's number four, Idaho. Weber State is not. One team is playing to potentially have a seed as high as number two in the nation. Weber State is not going to make the playoffs. So, hey, there is a gulf between these two teams. So if Weber State's going to keep it close, you can expect they think they're going to have to pull off some extra possessions they wouldn't normally get, and special teams is an area to look.
Yeah, Brian, that's the thing with the special teams here. You like Idaho under Eck has been quite good with their special teams play. That's the one thing I would hang your hat on if you're a Vandal here. Like, Idaho special teams have been, I think, certainly better than they were in the Paul Petrino days. Nate Mink dropping in to say that Weber is number one in the FCS in kickoff returns and 10th in net punting. Yeah, that's what they do. They try to play special teams. They try to play hard defense. And offensively, if they're going to figure it out, I know Mickey Mental has a history of being a guy that scores a ton of points in D2. They ran the ball a ton when he was a head coach at Notre Dame, not Notre Dame, but D2 Notre Dame. They went 11-2 in his final season, had a top 10 offense after he'd been there for, you know, like season and a half. They're going to commit very hard to winning this game through defense and special teams. That's the Weber formula. I know that Mickey Mental is not from the Jay Hill coaching tree, but this is the kind of thing you're going to have to look out for. Simon Miller jumping in to say losing special teams battle, Vonnie turnover too, and that spells upset for sure. Absolutely. If they can find a way to steal a possession on special teams, and if Idaho loses the turnover battle, this is absolutely the kind of game that would be very close. Brian and I talked a lot of shit about Northern Colorado last week, because it was the type of game, if Idaho showed up as flat as they did, they were still going to win. Look what happened. They still won. Brian, I have no confidence in that this week. If Idaho comes out with the same level of effort and execution that they did against Northern Colorado, this is a loss for sure in my eyes.
Yeah, I think we can hit the Idaho end in a second, but just as an analogy, I feel that Weber State today is, for different reasons, at about the level that we thought Eastern Washington was early in the year. Is in a game, look, Idaho should be favored. Idaho should win this game. But you can understand the route to Weber State being competitive, or Weber State pulling off the upset It would just, of course, look differently. But hey, before we talk to Idaho and Dallas, we have to talk about Snake River Stampede Canadian whiskey, which I'm glad I could give Martin 1 second notice on that. So look, Snake River Stampede, they're sponsoring Subs of the Club. It's a bunch of kick-ass guys. Not only do they run the, I believe, the nation's largest volunteer run rodeo, but they make some damn good whiskey. Snake River Stampede is $25.95 a fifth or $45.95 a handle, the only size I buy. If you want to, like, hey, you might celebrate a Weber win with the 1915 small batch, because that'd be number 8 win on the season for Idaho. That's a big deal. The small batch is aged an additional 2 years. It's got a double barrel finish as well. So look, no matter which option you go with, you can't go wrong. Give Snake River Stampede a shot.
So, Brian, you alluded to it. I want to quickly bring back that Eastern game. So, Idaho did trail Eastern by a touchdown midway through the third quarter. Do you think that there is a chance Weber State could have a lead this late in the game this week?
Well, look, now the variable talking the Idaho end is, and I don't want, on our post game, I referenced Vandal PTSD being real. And a lot of the Vandal PTSD for the Eck era is 100% based off generalizing from Petrino and Akey and Holt and Dennis Erickson part two
and into Tom Cable, who we don't speak of.
Yes. Generalizing all of that to be dramatic generational trauma into the team today, which of course, hey, the team's different. This, I honestly think the last week was the first kind of no show I remember from the Jason Eck era. In the press conference, Jason Eck doing the right thing like he always does, saying, hey, part of that is he needs to work on coaching the team up after a big game. I'm not concerned about a no-show here, because I think Idaho vomited out their worst outing of the season against Northern Colorado. And I think it was probably good for the team to be confronted with the fact that they can't nail it in even against the shittiest team and have a walkaway win. And no one's confusing Weber State with Northern Colorado. But the literal answer to your question, if things go wrong for Idaho, yes. But here's where I'm a little bit, part of why I'm less concerned is, look, if you watch the Idaho State tape, which I did, you did as well, Weber was able to, look, if they sell out, they can get to the quarterback. That's a route Weber probably thinks that they can pressure Idaho. Difference is Giovanni McCoy he's been able to make people miss and extend plays. And with pressure, that actually sets up one of the scenarios that Weber State's been less effective protecting against, which is quarterback rolling to the right, where you start to get a little bit more of those, where some of the coverage might break down a little bit. That's where Hayden Hatton has been so damn good for so damn long. Weber State struggled with that against Davis when Idaho State was able to do it. Weber State struggled with it. Idaho, I would expect they're probably going to do it on purpose. But second, Weber's not going to be able to sell out on the blitz against Idaho the same way they did against Idaho State, because look, Idaho's got the leading rusher in the league. That's a different, it's a more dynamic threat that Idaho represents. There's more ways Idaho can potentially pick apart the Weber defense, which is to say, I think Idaho State was a uniquely bad matchup for Weber State. I don't think that's the case for Idaho. I think Idaho, because look, we're in week 10 of an 11-week season, Dallas. We know Jason Eck's going to want to establish the run, and that itself is what puts teams on its heels. And I think there's a good chance that Idaho's going to be able to be successful doing that, because, well, most weeks of the season, that's what the Vandals have been able to do. That's why they're ranked what they are.
Yeah, Brian, I think you pretty much nailed it on the head. It's obviously discouraging to see that Weber State has figured out their quarterback, all of a sudden went down to the shithole of Pocatello and pulled off a win against, I know that Idaho State has historically been terrible, but I think going into that game, there's not many people that would have said Weber State is a better team than Idaho State. I think on paper, just looking at resumes and honestly how they have just played as a whole this year, Idaho State, most people thought we're going to beat Weber. But like you said, you go down to Pocatello, you know they're not going to run the ball. You know they're going to throw it. So you know it's pin your ears back, rush the passer on every single play, and you don't have to worry about it. Which then, when you're putting that much pressure on their quarterback, it allows Munoz to do a lot of those things that he was doing very successfully, where it was a lot of RPOs, a lot of simple play action with one read. Honestly, most of the throws he made, he was just staring down a receiver on the sideline and then throwing it to it. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of cross-field progression going on, which doesn't really bode well when you're going up against the number four team in the country. Like you said, Brian, the best running back in the FCS could have a day and get up to 1,000 yards this weekend. He's at 872. Wouldn't be shocked to see him get up into that 1,000 or right on the verge of it. Idaho has 1,500 rushing yards this season. You cannot come in and expect McCoy's going to throw the ball 50 times so we know it's a passing situation on every play. That's not going to happen. Idaho, I think, is structured much more soundly than Idaho State is, which is obviously the most obvious thing you think anybody could have said on this podcast. But I think that's going to be the difference with Weber State. I know they just had that huge upset. I mean, huge upset. But I don't really feel a lot of fear about this rookie quarterback and them making strides here from Idaho State to Idaho, because Idaho just lines up completely different. Yes, their offensive line is great. That's going to help, I think, a lot with Munoz, but I just don't see them being able to score enough points on Idaho to keep up with what Idaho should do offensively because of the ability to switch between letting McCoy throw it down the field to, again, the best receivers in the FCS, or letting Anthony Woods run all over. Or if Woods is hurt or dinged up or just need a change of pace, Nick Romano's having a pretty good year there as well.
Yeah, and the other part I'd pay attention to when we're thinking about, hey, what has had to be present for Idaho to lose or the games be close? Because, like, Idaho hasn't had this army of close games. They have two losses on the season to two very good teams. It's usually Idaho being underwater turnovers and mistakes that prevent Idaho's offense from keeping the opposing team's offense on ice and just wearing out the defense. Well, look, Weber State, they're not cornerback you anymore like they were under Jay Hill. A ton of the first stringers left. One's out with an injury for the year, which Mark Collins out for an injury with the year. So relative to last season, this is essentially all second stringers. And I don't mean that because of graduation. I mean, at the literal level, if you're a starting DB right now for Weber, you would not have been first string on that team last year, which is part of why Weber State is the number 10 pass defense in Big Sky play, giving up 236 yards per game, picked off 5 passes in Big Sky play too. I mean, Weber only has 8 picks on the year, 3 of which came in the Northern Iowa game in week 2. So Weber has not been effective at forcing turnovers. So, I mean, maybe to try to help with that, maybe we will see a little bit more blitz because that's how Weber thinks they can force Giovanni to make mistakes. But on the season, Weber has not been punishing opposing offenses for being aggressive in the pass game. I mean, that's part of why I picked Idaho State last week. Another stat that I think you want to look at for Weber's pass defense. They're the number 9 pass defense in terms of completion percentage at 64.4% per game. Just right around, that's honestly right around Northern Colorado, Idaho State level as far as not being that effective. So, hey, I guess what you'd say is for Weber, for the Idaho template of turnovers are part of what keeps the game close, you'd have to have Idaho simultaneously be playing poorly while Weber gets their apex level of the season.
Brian, I don't think I have a whole lot of final thoughts other than just what I'm most interested in seeing is if the Idaho offensive line holds up as well against second most sacks in the conference. Like Weber State, yes, their defense has, we've been over it. It's not quite the same as it's been. A lot of talent left. Again, there are some All-Americans that still are there. Like there are definitely guys, but again, 25 sacks on the year, second in conference. I'm really interested to see if Leighton Vining and the rest of the young guys on the offensive line are going to hold up well against that front, because I do think that's going to make the difference. If Idaho loses the turnover battle, and if Weber can get an extra possession out of their special teams, or even, God forbid, a special teams touchdown, that's going to make this game a lot closer. But before we get to score predictions, if you are looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, don't look past your backyard. Hughes River Expeditions has been vandal-owned and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you on the vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, the Salmon River Canyons, or the Selway. You could even check out the Perseid Meteor Shower, one of the special trips the Hughes River Expeditions can put on for you. Camp on pristine bitches and beaches. They got them all. You could run amazing white water. There's scenic trails to hike. There's plenty of wildlife to go check out. There's beautiful natural hot springs to soak in. And again, like always, guys, some of the best and most remote stretches of river in the entire USA. Just bring your clothes and let HRE handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call them now at 800-262-1882 or check them out at HughesRiver.com. Producer Martin, do you have any thoughts on Idaho before we jump into score predictions?
I got nothing. You guys did a good job previewing it.
I will gladly take that pat on the back. Thank you very much. All right, Martin, I think you're up first.
Just Idaho, right? I'm going to go Idaho 35-23. Sadly, Nick does not get money for them using their name.
Boo. So the intrigue I have in this game, Dallas, other than the stuff you talked about, is just looking at what kind of rebound Idaho has off of the easily worst effort in the season. I think this team is definitely has what it takes to rebound. That we already saw them do it once off the loss to Montana. Follow that up with your best effort of the season. But I want to see how Idaho stabilizes to take care of business and get that playoff seed, get those multiple home games potentially. So that's the intrigue on my end. I think Idaho's going to win this. I'm going to go 38-20. I think we're going to see a stronger offensive outing. I think Idaho defensively is going to look, they're going to see the things that you talked about and about with Munoz having relatively simplistic reads. And I think that Idaho is going to be able to adjust to that just fine. Even in the rough effort against Northern Colorado, it's not like that defense struggled against UNC or something like that. So I don't even know if you'd say the defense needs to rebound. They're going to be healthier. Trey Thomas should be back for that game too, for this game too. So yeah, about 38-20 Idaho, and then cruising into that final week.
We're all in about the same area, guys. I've got Idaho 31-21. I don't think Idaho is necessarily going to explode on offense. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see Idaho get up near the 40s, but I've been predicting that for a handful of weeks now, and it just hasn't happened. It's just not X style, which, hey, I respect that. You go in, you beat the opponent, and you don't embarrass them. You just go in there, control the clock. I get it. It's tough to score in the 40s when you are draining the play clock so much. So I've got Idaho 31-21. Let's hit the comment section. Jason Mayer, Idaho 35, Weber 20 with one special teams touchdown. Tom Kendall 31-17. Dane Moon 38-24. Steve Kurtz 42-14. Guys, I'm only going to call out the actual names if anybody picks Weber. So far, that's not the case. Idaho Real Estate 42-17. 42-24, Duffer's Tavern. Brian Kennison, 27-24. Nice and close one there. C. Hansen, 38-14. Tyler Morley, 35-17. Kevin Ridenour, 35-17. Patty Firks, 35-20. Simon Miller, 34-24. We're all in that same boat, which means we're all either geniuses or we're all about to be really wrong. Hopefully we're geniuses because, I mean, we've never gotten anything wrong in the history of Tubbs at the Club ever. Not once. With that said, guys, let's jump into Around the Big Sky predictions. We're going to jump in just to the biggest barn burner of the week, guys. I know you've been all waiting for us to talk about it. Northern Arizona at Northern Colorado.
Northern Arizona wins the Northern Bowl.
Yeah, the Northern Directional Championship. Northern Arizona has been one of the tougher teams to pick because the glut of this conference is so up and down and so matchup dependent. But Northern Arizona has the matchup they need this week. So yeah, I guess I am going to go. I'm going to go Northern Arizona. I guess also think Northern Arizona. Keep in mind they have one of like the top five most difficult schedules on the season. And I guess if you're looking for any intrigue, if you're watching this for some reason, NAU has switched up what they're doing at quarterback again. Angel Flores has been taking the most snaps under center So do with that what you will. Northern Arizona wins.
Yeah, I got to go with NAU as well, guys. That I know that Northern Colorado obviously held Idaho to a much more reasonable output than what we had all hoped for. But I don't think that that magic is going to carry on to an NAU upset. NAU is just a better team at this point. It doesn't really matter, I think, who trots out there at quarterback. Just overall, the program is farther along than UNC. Maybe UNC figures it out. Again, I think Ed Lamb will figure that out. But right now, they're starting at square one. Tom Kendall in the comments, 24-21 NAU. Patty Firks, NAU, although this would be very funny for UNC to win. Roger Dorn, right, 31, track 21. That is the comment of the day. Steve Kurtz, 24-13. Jason Mayer, 28, Northern Colorado 9, I think is what that says. It's little font because Jason likes to twist my buttons every once in a while. Or twist the knife and push my buttons. Words are, again, I'm struggling with words today, guys.
Last thing. This is the second... This is the second freshman quarterback NAU has started this year. Adam DeMonte initially took over for Kai Milner. And anyway, we're on freshman number two.
Again, I don't really appreciate Chris Ball's program. I think NAU should just be sent off to D2, much like Northern Colorado probably should be. Anyways, Simon Miller, not so fast, my friend. One guy picking Northern Colorado saying Koikendahl, I really hope I got that right, keeps up his hot streak and gets Northern Colorado their first win of the year.
The hot streak of 22 passes for 55 yards. Thank you, Simon Miller. I'm glad you're here for that.
And then last but not least, C. Hansen calling it, Northern wins. I think we're probably pretty spot on with that one. All right, guys. Patty, I know you're going to love this one. Eastern Washington at Montana State.
Montana State.
I have no idea why you'd go there. So Eastern Washington has the second worst rush defense in Big Sky play, giving up 225.8 yards per game on 5.9 yards per carry. Montana State averages 298.8 yards per game in Big Sky play on 7.8 yards per carry. Something's going to break and it's going to be the Eastern defense. So no, Montana State. And look, this is a must win for Montana State. If they're, Montana State needs to win out to try to move their seat up. They have their huge game next week. So maybe this is one of a couple trap, quote unquote, trap games this week, but I am not concerned about Montana State blowing this.
Yeah, this is the worst game on the schedule this week. As Patty Frakes jumping in, or Patty Frakes, I still pronounce your last name wrong. I just have done that for years, man. I'm a fucking piece of shit. Dude, this is going to be bad. That's really all he said. Just a reminder for everybody, Idaho had 363 rushing yards on Eastern in Cheney, and I fail to see how that defense has gotten any better at stopping the run. Montana State is going to destroy. Jason Mayer, 42-6. Tom Kendall, 49-7. Ryan Phillips jumping in, 42-17. Steve Kurtz saying snoozer by halftime, 55-9. Yeah, this is...
So on the Big Sky season, Idaho's averaging 165 rushing yards per game. So the Montana State is very close to doubling up Idaho's average. That's what they do. Idaho is the mirage on the Montana State schedule. It's being able to hold the team under 200 yards. Honestly, holding the team under 300 yards has been a mirage. It's happened twice, Idaho and South Dakota State.
One last one. Brian Kennison, Bobcats 44. Red turf, not as bad as blue turf, 13. Fully agree on that, 100%. I don't mind the red turf because I look at it as a big old middle finger to Boise State. You're not special. Anybody can do this. Anyways, another barn burner, guys. Cal Poly at Sac State.
Sac State.
Well, definitely going Sacramento State. And the intrigue for me here is this is a must win for Sacramento State. They sit at 6-3 on the season. They're still around top 10-ish, which is, I don't know, maybe both surprising and not. The Hornets have two quality wins on the season. Shockingly, Nicholls is a quality win right now based on how the conference play has gone. But I think Sac State needs to for sure win out for the playoff hopes they have. And I think with the psyche we saw from Sacramento State completely imploding against Montana State, this Hornets team wants nothing to do with a must-win last game of the season. which it shouldn't matter because Sacramento, because Cal Poly's terrible. So picking Sacramento State, but that is to me the, if you're going to watch this game, that's what you're watching is, can Sacramento State get it together to avoid dealing with some adversity last week, the season they're not ready for.
Yeah. Jumping in, Patty picked 45-24 Montana State. So the Eag fan here does think it's going to be a little closer than the rest of us do, but yeah, Brian, honestly, after getting blown apart 34-7 to Montana, this feels like it's a, you have to bounce back right now because you don't want any, I know UC Davis is definitely down this year, but there is no bit of Sac State that wants to be going into the Causeway Classic on the road, hoping to get that win number 7 to get in. Again, they played Montana State close. They played Idaho close. They beat Stanford. Like, they have some quality losses on their schedule and then the FBS win, but really, if you lose to Cal Poly and you lose to UC Davis and you're sitting there at 6-5, you don't really have a resume that screams, grab me. Now, I will say, Jason Mayer points out, hey, Sac State needs to win to stay in the top 8 because all the other teams around them are losing. So, again, we're talking like nightmare scenario here that they lose both of those. They're 6-5 and they're either the last team in or the first team out. Realistically, they're going to go throttle Cal Poly this weekend and it's just going to be a moot point. They hope to win UC Davis and end up, you know, trying to be a seed. Going through the comment section here, Tom Kendall, Sac 37, CP 14. Again, Coward Poly. I don't think anybody's going to pick them here. Sac State 24-14, Steve Kurtz. Dane Moon, Sac 40, CP 1. I think that's what that is. Or maybe just an L. Can't tell. Lan Larrison is back for UC Davis, it looks like. Thanks, Patty. But again, going through here, guys, everybody's picking Sac State. Cal Poly's just not it. They're just not good. Sam Heward might be the guy. Paul Wolf might be the guy to turn it around, but it sure as shit ain't this year. Moving forward, guys. Montana at top 5, Portland State.
Sacheray goes for 500 total yards and completely dismantles Montana's dream season. Portland State.
God damn it, Martin. Okay.
It could happen. It feels like they're due for like a what the hell kind of game.
Okay, so like here's the intrigue of the matchup. Montana in Big Sky play, easily the best rushing defense. They're giving up 2.8 yards per carry. They're giving up 80 yards per game on the season. Five rushing touchdowns on the season. Portland State, the number 2 rushing offense in the Big Sky and one of the best in the nation in Big Sky play, 257.5 yards per game, 5.9 yards per carry. That is what Portland State rides to their number 2 scoring offense in the Big Sky, 36.7 points per game. So it's a strength on strength matchup. I obviously trust the Montana strength much more right now than Portland State. Montana looks like the most dialed in team in the conference right now. I think there's a chance it's close for a quarter or something like that. I think it's going to look better for Portland State than it did for Sacramento State this week, losing at Montana 34-7. But I'm not really concerned. Again, Montana's dialed in a way that this looks like the kind of Bobby Hauk team that if you're a Grizz and you're stoked about him coming back for that second stint starting back in 2018, this is the type of team you're hoping to see.
Yeah, when you're talking about strength on strength, Brian, what I hear is, okay, this is going to come down to coaching. And unfortunately, I believe a lot more in Bobby Hauk than I do. And again, people seem to forget this. Bruce Barnum was one of the 2 finalists for the Idaho State job. Like, the guy is probably not long for Portland State. I know they've had a swing up a little bit this year, but again, they're just kind of mediocre at all times. It just is what it is. I do want to point out the comment section saying, hey, this game could be closer than people think. It's right in between those 2 big games. You got Sac State. You got, again, Montana State at the end of the year. Portland State slipping in that gap is certainly ripe for the upset pick here, but I just don't see it. Montana is terrifying. They have seemed to figure it out. I was really hoping they were just going to sleepwalk through this whole year. Hauk was going to be gone, and Montana was just going to be up in arms trying to figure out what they were going to do. And unfortunately, at the end of the year, here it is. They've figured it out. They play great defense. They don't turn the ball over a ton.
No, I think Hauk is probably the clubhouse leader for coach of the year.
unfortunately. I hate to say that, but unless, again, unless they get throttled next weekend and Idaho comes away with the auto bid in the Big Sky, maybe make the argument for Jason Eck there. But unfortunately, with what Montana has done and how they've turned it around this season, it's probably Montana, guys. Going to the comment section, Tom Kendall, top five PSU 28-24. Patty picking PSU, and I don't care. Jason Mayer, 2018 after Montana shits itself but figures it out late. Steve Kurtz, 35-7 Grizz. Ryan Phillips, 28-21 Grizz. Brian Kennison, 33-38 for Portland State. Bobby gets arrested for starting a brawl in Mary's Club. I love that. But again, this is the most trap game of trap games for Brawl of the Wild next week, but I just don't see it, guys. Montana's just too good of a team to screw this up at this point. Hopefully they get throttled in the Brawl of the Wild, but it doesn't feel like they're going to have the letdown this week. Guys, that takes us to the Sickos Bowl, the father and son game that we have all been waiting our entire lives to see. And by entire lives, I mean like 4 weeks, because I really don't care. Dan Hawkins taking on Cody Hawkins in the Nepotism Bowl. And Idaho State might actually be better than UC Davis this year, guys. Martin, who you got in the father-son game?
Dan Hawkins wins. I think they'll be like a 10-point game for UC Davis.
Yeah, I got a reality check on Idaho State last week against Weber State. Because, like, the story of Idaho State has been one of the more promising stories of the Big Sky this season. But the Bengals do look, they're still a 3-6 football team. They're 3-3 in Big Sky play. And Davis has played themselves back on the playoff bubble. They have no margin for error, but at 5-4, if Davis wins out, they've got a realistic shot at being one of the last teams into the FCS playoffs. And like you referenced earlier from the comments section, Lan Larson's been back for 2 weeks. He's rushed for over 100 yards in each of the games back. A couple weeks ago in a 38-21 loss to NAU, which is part of why Dallas, you're low on Davis, because maybe you should be. Larson, 24 carries for 101 yards. Then last week against top five Portland State, Larson, 25 carries, 136 yards and 3 touchdowns. So like, yeah, the dude's back. The dude's healthy. And I don't know. I mean, hey, Davis is a little bit better defensively than I think it's easy to give him credit for. So, I think the teams are trending in the opposite direction. I think Idaho State already crested this year. And look, 3 wins compared to 1 last year, that is a meaningful improvement. But I think Davis has more to play for. I think Davis is the more complete team. So, I'm picking UC Davis.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you always want to beat the family members, especially, you know, when you have basically been in your dad's shadow your entire career, just the way that things have worked out, from being a quarterback that probably shouldn't have been playing in Power 5 football to being the offensive coordinator to, you know, I can see where Cody Hawkins is probably really fired up for this game, really wants to go, you know, kick his dad's ass. He's obviously very familiar with the UC Davis program, having been the offensive coordinator for so long there, but I just don't see it. Like you said, Brian, UC Davis has so much more to play for in this game. Again, if they win out, they're still kind of on the bubble. If they beat Sac State in the final game of the season, I think 7 wins gets them in. This is a team that has a ton to play for. They're getting healthy at the right time. Like you said, ISU has absolutely peaked already, which there's nothing to be like upset about. I know that we love shit on the Bengals, but if you're a Bengal fan, like, you went from Rob Fennessy to 1 year of Charlie Raggle being just absolute tire fire. And I mean, yeah, I think he said the right things. He pointed out that not a whole lot's going to fix there unless things get changed, but Cody Hawkins comes in and finds a way to pull off 3 wins. That's exponential growth from previous seasons, but this just does not feel like the kind of game that's going to happen in. Again, when you can run the ball as well as you do, I don't think Idaho State's got a chance, because they're going to have to just chuck it a ton to score as quickly as they can, because I think UC Davis is going to control possession really heavily in this game. I think that leads to Daddy Hawkins winning. It is what it is. Not a big fan, but I think that's what's going to happen. Comment section saying a lot of the same things. Tom Kendall, 34-24, Daddy Hawk over Baby Hawk. Pop, 28, Junior, 14 from Steve Kurtz. Jason Mayer, 35-21 for ISU. Student bests the master and gets the first pick of the hoarder corner where King Spud is finally found. I could transition this into a podcast about King Spud, guys, but we're just going to power through this. C. Hansen, ISU, 2-1-dimensional, 35-21. Davis, feeling the same thing, guys. It's just not going to happen for ISU this year.
Well, hey, to hit your playoff point, if Sac State wins this week, they move to 7-4. I'm saying that wrong. If Sac State wins this week and Davis wins this week, it feels like it is setting up the Causeway Classic to potentially be a de facto playoff game. Because Sac State they'd be at 7-3. My bad. Okay, they'd be at 7-3, and Davis would be at 6-4. If Davis picks off that win, they're both 7-4, but Davis has the head to head. And what Sam Herder has been saying, if you follow Sam Herder, one of the national FCS reporters, his belief is that there's going to be a ton of teams in that 7-4-ish range, and there's going to be a bit more heartbreak this year than you might guess. So, it's usually safe to assume the Big Sky can get four teams in. I am not confident that there's a chance at a fifth team for the Big Sky. So that is a storyline to pay attention to if you like to watch the whole conference, is the collision course of Sacramento State and UC Davis for the Causeway Classic.
Final thoughts, guys. Tom Kendall jumping in. Can we pick the Vandal soccer game? Big shout out to the Vandal women who won the Big Sky this week. They are going to be taking on Gonzaga, of all places. It is here in Spokane, 5:00 Pacific time, November 11th. That's Saturday. I don't have great hopes, guys. Gonzaga's got a pretty great program. They've knocked off some ranked teams this year. I don't love that. Probably going to have to pick the Bulldogs in that game. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to go with Idaho. I know nothing about soccer, and I don't pretend to. So I definitely, Idaho's no-brainer. First round NCAA tournament, no, this team's ready.
Love it. Love the optimism. Martin?
I'm going to go with Dallas on this. I Gonzaga is a good school, and they're the seeded team. So,
yeah, unfortunately, they're quite good at soccer up there in Spokane. So
my research says just wrong. But hey, we have two things we have to slam through real quick before we finish. One, patreon.com/tubsoftheclub, guys. Look, this week is one of the types of games that Discord was absolutely, well, accidentally made for, which is it's a road game. If you're in, it's wire-to-wire chat the whole time with a ton of people who are fun, just interested in having a good time for the Vandal experience. And then you get to meet everyone at the home games if you're able to travel from later. So, yeah, you can join for as little as $250 a month. We love people who join for more than $250 a month. But, hey, if you can do $250 a month, you can support the show, patreon.com/tubstheclub. And last night, we're recording on Tuesday, November 7th. Monday, November 6th, was the debut of Vandal basketball head coach Alex Pribble. And look, Idaho traveled to, they made the 8-mile trek to Pullman for the renewing of the Battle of the Palouse, which the fact that exists is a win for Idaho that it's back. Now the results, hey, not great. Idaho goes down 84-59. Leading scorer for Idaho was Quinn Denker, who goes 3 of 7 from the field for 12 points. Also, Kyson Rose chipped in 9 points, and Julius Mims grabbed 7 boards for Idaho. What doomed Idaho was shooting 34.6% on the night. I didn't get to watch the game because it's on the Pac-12 network, and I hate the Pac-12 network, and the existence of the Pac-12 network almost makes me not be sorry for the loss of the Pac-12 itself. But hey, just based off the people I talked to, you saw the defensive effort that's going to be significantly improved for Big Sky play, which is the part of the season that matters for this team. It's just probably going to take a little bit of time to figure out who the offensive contributors are. So, hey, just have some patience with Pribble. I mean, he's starting from scratch 100%. He's starting from as much scratch as it is absolutely possible to start Dallas. Vandal schedule, that if you want to follow basketball, which I recommend doing, we're not going to really do it on the show that much until football's done, because why would we? It's like the best football season I've ever seen for Idaho. This week on November 9th, in Moscow, Idaho hosts Cal State Northridge, And then a week from tonight on November 14th, Idaho also hosts D2 Evergreen State. So that's a basketball slate. Just pay attention if you can, guys. Support the team as you can, too.
To sum that up, basically what Brian's saying, guys, veggies are coming, but veggies can be actually quite good.
They're going to have seasoning this year.
If you have the right head chef, veggies don't have to be terrible. And that's really what Brian is saying. Basketball might not be terrible this year, guys. That's the most ringing endorsement I can give, because, again, I don't have the Pac-12 Network because Larry Scott's a moron. But we might have fun Vandal basketball to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the early returns, are the team is playing fast-paced. The team is playing much stronger defensively. That's part of what the template's likely going to be this year. Just, again, hey, just give the team time. In the same way, in the opposite way, last year we knew to not give the team time because of what was going on. Hey, Pribble needs a leash, and the new guys, the completely new roster, needs some time to gel. So, hey, just be patient, support the team.
With that, guys, 12 o'clock Pacific, Saturday, Barbecue State. Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.